Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. I think the big word of the year is exciting as we enter our fourth year on Blog Talk Radio. But it was a lot of changes in the latter part of 2012 and caused us to go on hiatus there for a couple of months. And I really do appreciate all the on-demand listens through the last 3 months of the year, even though we were not broadcasting live. Recently, Franchise Essentials Media Group, along with Franchise Essentials, merged with Franchise Foundry, and now Franchise Today is produced and developed by Franchise Foundry. As well, yesterday, I received some great news from our friends Brad and Sherry Fishman at Fishman Public Relations and Marketing, as they have committed to be our marketing and PR partner for 2013. As many of you know, they are also our partner at France Summit, our virtual training platform with an event scheduled for September 2013. Really, really thankful for Brad and Sherry and Deborah Vilches over at Fishman. We really believe that with the new format of Franchise Today, their assistance will really help us take it to a new level in 2013 and beyond. And along with that new format, we will be developing is a brand new website and blog that will work with hand-in-hand with the show. I hope to have that launched here sometime in January. As well, the same thing will be occurring with Franchise Summit. There will be a new blog and a new website, and it'll be very interactive so we can build community throughout the year. The new series on Franchise Day I'm really excited about because it's all tied towards a series of events. There'll be two, three, four-part series throughout the year. And that's basically due mostly in part to the success we've had in our three annual legal series. Again, the legal series will be part of Franchise Day this year. And just to give you an overview, this week starts, of course, the new year with Franchise Today, and it's our marketing series, Promote Your Brand. And my guest today, Steve Greenbaum, CEO at Postnet, will lead off and talk some about his experience at CBS Undercover Boss, as well as some of the culture and values behind the brand, things that he brings to the table. It's all about at least a big part of this is promotion. Next week, Jeremy LeDuc, the CEO at Elements Local, will be on. We'll be talking about the power of local marketing. The following week, Sherry Fishman from Fishman Public Relations and Marketing will be on talking about beyond PR and the importance of integrating marketing and PR in today's business environment. And then the last segment of the series will be last week in January. And friend Sandy Lechner from Sprout Lab will be in. Maybe give us a lot of insight on branding in the franchise environment. Well, February, real excited to get into February because we look at that as Franchise Month. It's IFA convention. And we are titling the series in February to Voices in Franchising. The highlight of that, of course, is IFA President and CEO is committed to be on the air on February 14th, just 3 days before the IFA convention. And, of course, that's Steve Caldera, a great friend of the show. March will take us to a two-part franchise finance series and a two-part multi-unit conference, multi-unit franchising series, which, of course, will coincide with the multi-unit conference in Las Vegas. April and May, we're dedicating to our fourth annual legal series. And this year we're going from 7 weeks to 8 weeks. And that's going to culminate with a recap of the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington, D.C. just before Memorial Day. And in June, we'll do a couple of segments in a series on franchise sales and development and also an exciting series technology and franchising. In the past, we've gone on hiatus for the summer. This year, we're not doing that. We intend on bringing you at least 50 live shows in 2013, in addition to 4 to 8 special edition shows like we did with Susan Blackbeth last summer with respect to the private equity conference that was going on up in Chicago. So July and August is really going to be a special treat because it's going to be our franchisor spotlight. And it's not from the perspective of bringing on brands just to toot their own horn. It's going to be entirely on how they've achieved success by utilizing franchise best practices. And there'll be some very specific topics. And one that I'm really looking forward to is one brand that's really using technology and basically running their locations from an iPad. So more details will be coming out. Just a look ahead, September, October, and November. We'll focus in September around government issues and tie that into the IFA's Public Affairs Conference. Then in October, we'll tie into Franchise Updates, Franchise Leadership and Development Conference that'll be in Atlanta, and we'll probably talk a lot that month about franchise sales and development and leadership. And then, of course, in November, we'll carry that message through as we'll be at West Coast Franchise Expo in Anaheim, and just really a packed year. And by the end of next week, we should be able to announce the entire lineup for at least the first 6 months. And as you know, I have been a loyal listener, as many of you have, to the Franchise Today show. It was hard to even keep, 2 weeks ahead. So this will be really great from a planning perspective. And, of course, all the shows are available on demand. And I'd like to reach out to all our friends at the Franchise Expo South in Miami. If you're not yet there, safe travels there. Much success for a great show. I'm real excited because Franchise Expo South is moving to Houston right in my backyard next year, so I'm really excited about that. Of course, we have the IFA convention, as I mentioned, coming up in Las Vegas. That's only 37 days away. Please get on the horn, get online, get registered, participate, be there for all the events. I know I'm real excited. Not only will I be working and facilitating some roundtables, as well as being able to realize the experience of contributing a max donation to FranPAC, which myself and Christian Faulkner of Franchise Today, as well as my partner, also committed to the same, as well as I'll finally be able to walk across the stage and have committed and got my CFE designation, and I'm really honored to do that. Should have done it a long time ago, but I didn't. But better late than never, and if you haven't yet done so, I highly recommend you you look into it. You think you know everything until you start getting involved with the CFE courses and stuff, and you'll find that it really, really will help your career and your business. Coming up in January also, I'll be presenting in the Elements Local webinar series that's geared towards franchise marketers. I believe the first one is on January 23rd. You can check their website at elementslocal.com. Also, I'm honored to have been asked by Michelle Rowan, the COO at Franchise Business Review, to participate in a webinar series on franchise growth. And I'll be on a panel with Michael Mabry from Mouya Burgers, Fries, and Shakes, an upcoming startup. That'll be on January 22nd. So, I mean, a lot going on in Franchise Today. Couldn't be more excited. And I think that what really adds to the excitement is today's guest. Steve Greenbaum is a CFE, has served as Chief Executive Officer and Director at PostNet since he founded PostNet International Franchise Corporation in 1992, after spending nearly 10 years in the pack and ship industry. Since the inception of PostNet's franchising program in July of 93, the company has licensed more than 700 franchises in the U.S. and numerous countries internationally, including over 230 locations in Southern Africa. He's been a CFE, as I said, since 1997. He was honored with the International Franchise Association's Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 2003 and the Gary Rockwell Award for Excellence in Franchise Development in 2004. He's also a former chairman of the IFA and is also a past chair of IFA's Educational Foundation. Believe it or not, he also finds time to serve on the board of the Health Store Foundation, a nonprofit organization that has developed over 85 franchise child and family wellness shops in rural Kenya and Rwanda. Just remarkable. Steve, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for taking the time out of what must be an unbelievable busy schedule, especially writing the recent experience on CBS Undercover Boss. And it's really exciting that franchising is really coming front and center on these various shows. You know, you have the Be the Boss show now, of course, CBS Undercover Boss, where you and several other franchisors have been fortunate to share your experience. Growing a brand. I know we had Dina Dwyer Owens on in the past, as well as Shelley Sun and Catherine Monson, and you'll be our fourth guest that has a Undercover Boss experience. And this week, I know I'm excited because one of our clients, Sub-Zero Ice Cream, is actually on Shark Tank on ABC, and just a great time for franchising in general. And as we're using this as our launch for the year, our first of four in a marketing series, Promote Your Brand. I mean, nothing could have been truer than obviously Postnet coming front and center, highlighted, showcased, spotlighted in CBS Undercover Boss, but obviously there was a lot more than that. So why don't we lead into, and if you would, just kind of give us some of your insight and perspective about, you know, your appearance and experience on Undercover Boss.
Sure. You know, before I do that, Paul, you had made a comment about, you know, us being fortunate that franchising is being showcased or it's visible in these kind of formats. And the reason is that there's no franchise organization where any one person is responsible for the success or the challenges of the organization. It's a huge team effort with your headquarters team, with your employees internally, franchisees, their teams, certainly the customer interaction. So the reason I think franchising has been so visible in this format is because it takes great organizations and teams to make great franchise businesses. And in order to do that, there has to be a tremendous amount of trust and the ability to let go, as any good organization knows. And so you've got CEOs that are doing a better job, I think, and I hope, including myself, of building leadership teams and management teams that own more responsibilities. It doesn't mean we need to get further away from the customer, but it just means these aren't one man and woman businesses.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree. And I really appreciate you preempting it with that, because there's so much we need to do to that end. And you know, and a lot of people that follow a lot of my posts and rants on social media, you know, I was quite upset with American Express and Small Business Saturday, because 2 years ago they completely excluded franchising, and after much discussion, we barely got a mention this year. And we're a big part of small business community. You're exactly right. It is not about one person. That's what I'm trying to get across with them. It's just so many people that just don't understand franchising. And just to take it one step further, in talking with Jerry Hancock, the founder at Sub-Zero Ice Cream, and he's finally been able to share some of the information about his experience at Shark Tank. I mean, here's, you know, billionaire entrepreneurs, and he was just blown away that they really don't have a grasp and an understanding of franchising and the franchise model. And we just have a lot of work to do in that regard. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that about, you know, that it is more than just one person. There's so many that have their life savings and their blood and guts in the game.
Yeah, well, guys and gals like me that have had the opportunity to do this are really representing, again, you know, their teams, their organizations, their brand, their franchisees, customers. It's not about the bosses ever, and I know all of my peers would agree with that. But it was an interesting experience. You know, what I found was that there was an objective through my experience to try to focus more on the person. And that's a tough thing to do, to be willing to, you know, talk about who you are, where you come from, good, bad, and indifferent. And then fundamentally go on a journey where it becomes clear that the dots are connected between some of the experiences and the people you meet. And it's a very interesting program. But what I enjoyed about it, what I really appreciated about it, was the opportunity to be there in the centers, shoulder to shoulder with hardworking people that understand our commitment to customer service and quality, and you know, listen to what they had to say about you know, their lives, their experience with the business and the brand, and you know, there were a lot of very interesting takeaways from the show that, you know, that I'm happy to share.
It was just a remarkable story, and it had to be really difficult for you, I would imagine, kind of rustling up some of the memories, walking down that path, and knowing you like I do. I mean, I've seen you at events, we've spoken and stuff, and a lot of it was a surprise to me, and I would imagine you had a hard time wanting to or putting yourself in that spotlight just because you know the show would have been would have showcased you as such. And I believe you're the type of guy that probably might have had a little bit of reluctance at the beginning. Is that correct?
I mean, you know, I guess, Paul, when it came down to the understanding I had about the show and kind of being at a personal crossroad of having an opportunity to create the kind of visibility and tell the brand story we've been wanting to tell in that scale and format for so long, you just kind of look at yourself and say, what's more important? And so to be able to do that for all the people that have worked so hard, for all the amazing franchise owners and partners we have in this business, I mean, it was a difficult decision, but I mean, it was clear to me, you know, that it was the right thing to do to create the visibility that they deserve. You know, this is a business and a brand. I've been in this industry nearly 30 years, coming up next year, and nearly 20 years franchising. So we have seen the best and the worst of economies, wars, changes in technology, changes in consumer needs. We live the life cycle of an experienced franchisor. So you've got a lot of listeners here and a lot of my friends in franchising that are younger companies that have experienced perhaps exciting growth, but it's learning how to become an effective organization and managing that growth. And so, you know, we really come from a unique perspective in terms of size, experience, and impact in terms of you know, how the world has changed. So that was interesting. But back to my personal journey, as you can imagine, not many people know that I dropped out of high school. It's not something I told anybody, including my own children, for many, many years. And it's not something I'm proud of. It's not something I'm ashamed of either. But I wouldn't have gone out of my way to make that point or to bring it up if it wasn't for you know, them wanting a really deep personal understanding of who you are, what drives you, what motivates you, and where you come from. And I come from fairly humble beginnings, and the show kind of showcased fundamentally my upbringing. And I was always a person, and I don't know if this helps listeners or not, but I have never felt that I'm a victim of circumstances or that I am what I am because of what happened to me. I've always been a believer since I've been a very young man, as far back as I can remember, that I define my experiences, that I define who I am, what I become in the business I build or the person I am. And that experiences shape you. And hopefully you learn and you absorb and you do the right thing with those experiences. But at the end of the day, businesses, great organizations, and I think good leaders understand that they drive the objective, the initiative, the who they are, the what their organization does, their vision, whatever it may be, that they're the driver. They are not impacted. I don't care if it's economies. I don't care if it's competition. Those are obstacles, but those aren't people or industry-shaping events.
Sure. You know, as you introduced yourself as the kid from Chicago has come a long way, I thought it was neat because that to me set the stage that automatically you were not losing sight of your roots, and everything seemed to build from there. And as the journey worked through the CBS Undercover Boss episode, I could see it, and it was this, to me, it was this feeling going back, understanding the roots, building from it, but looking at things as challenges, dealing with them, and then moving, you know, past them. But, and I think the key here is just not forgetting where you came from, because I think that's always the foundation that helps take you to this next level.
Mm. Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And I would suggest to you that the things I value most aren't houses and cars and motorcycles and stuff. The things I value most are relationships and people and experiences and the opportunities not only that I was given, but that I have helped create for other people as a result of not only being involved in franchising, but being in this business.
You know, it's a lot of people would say, oh, okay, you know, you got the houses, you got the motorcycles, the cars, live in a beautiful house up in the hills. You're in Colorado, one of the greatest cities in the country. You already have 700, you know, locations. You're still growing. You know, what do you have to worry about? I got to tell you, and I don't mean to embarrass you here, but you impressed the heck out of me at the Leadership and Development Conference back in October in Atlanta, because here was a panel discussion, and you were in the second row with a pad and pen, taking notes, participating in the discussion, when, quite frankly, I saw a lot of other franchisors that have nowhere near the success that you've achieved, and they're out having coffee, not participating.
Yeah,
so you're definitely leading by example. You're walking the walk. You're talking the talk. And the results are there. And
well,
so many.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Stephen.
No, I just wanted to say I appreciate it. I appreciate you're noticing that. And quite honestly, what has to happen for any, or I mean, we're here coming on 30 years, Paul, and it wasn't by accident.
No.
You know, the first 3 to 5, maybe you got lucky, maybe you hit a good economy, you know, 7 to 10, you know, the but there comes a point in time in business where if you're not focused on being a student of the business, continually learning, staying relevant, being aware, doing those things, then it's just a matter of time before someone better, faster, and smarter is going to either win market share or they're going to take advantage of any opportunities created by missing those opportunities. So,
sure.
We've reinvented ourselves and our business so many times. It's happened again in the last 3 to 5 years, and I was thrilled that CBS was interested in showcasing the evolution of our business model and brand from really business-to-consumer pack and ship business back in the 80s and early 90s to more of a neighborhood business center today that's very B2B-focused and where the model very much is about helping small business in the community. And that change didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen by mistake.
Well, it's a great point, and it certainly didn't happen overnight. And let's talk a little bit about the evolution of PostNet as a business and a brand, and especially as a lot of our listeners are always enthralled by technology. I mean, technology has to be a huge challenge that you and your partner, Brian, are facing on a daily basis, especially with franchisees that might not be, I think a better way to put it is, might be really phobic about technology. How does that all play into the equation?
Yeah, I think it's fairly understated just how involved we are, quite honestly. But we've always been fortunate that at the heart of our operating system in the centers has been a very comprehensive point of sale. In the old days, we captured transactional data, you know, the average transaction, you know, things like that. Today, because of technology, our point of sale data is pulled, it's managed electronically, it fuels a series of dashboards for our organization. We have a RFM model that's fueled for marketing. So we manage the recency, frequency, and monetary volume of a customer and teach franchisees how to use that data to encourage additional sales, build relationships, implement loyalty programs. So technology has become an incredibly powerful part of our business. We now have online print centers. We now help customers get online with a host of websites and web services. Our centers provide search engine optimization. We have mobile marketing platforms that are under the label PostNet. So we have gone from a model that really Brian and I joke, we operated the business back, 30 years ago with the equivalent of a bathroom scale and a cigar box for a cash register. And today, between our point of sale, the data platform at PostNet headquarters, which we call iPostNet, which fuels dashboards and technology tools and marketing tools for our franchisees and their use and effectiveness of growing and promoting their business, and the customer-facing tools that we use to keep them engaged and really connected to the relationship, technology is sort of central to our business today. It's like never before.
Well, it seems like you and PostNet are very much a big part not only of your franchisee success, but of the franchisee's clients' success. These small business owners that rely on the local PostNet for your services. I mean, obviously, that's a big resource to them and ultimately a key component towards their success. So it really is a nice ripple effect.
Yeah, well, it's cultural. I mean, if you think about it, we were young 20-something-year-old guys when we started in business. The lure of entrepreneurship and the excitement of starting a small business, and then a couple years in realizing that we were pretty good at it, and we got into independently developing small businesses for other people before we learned about franchising and understood franchising and did quite a bit of that work, developed over 400 independent centers. We were inspired helping other people succeed. It's always monetary because we have families and lives and we got to put food on the table, but it's inspiring. And we were able to create a culture here where people understand that it's not just about the individual success of any person or franchisee in this organization, but it's about the greater good of the whole. We have a set of values that we follow, and I know a lot of folks in franchising do, but one of our sayings is care for the whole. And it's really more about being thoughtful and considerate of others, making a difference in their lives, and being a little more selfless with regard to the greater good of the organization. And so people join this franchise organization because they believe in that. And because they believe in that, they extend that in their communities to their customers. And so we are looking for people that share our values and culture, and it goes much deeper than that, obviously, but fundamentally I'm using this as an example. But it creates a customer experience because people find us because they want to be a part of that and they want to share that.
We're live today on Franchise Today. My guest is Steve Greenbaum, the CEO at PostNet, and we're talking about his recent experience on Undercover Boss. We're talking about values and culture in the PostNet organization, and it was really almost difficult for me to watch as you were, posing as Brad Kelly, the failed motorcycle shop operator, and you're talking with franchisees of yours. Of course, they don't know who you are at that point. And you're hearing, their stories and the trials and tribulations. And I imagine it would be very difficult to, and it had to have been very difficult, not to want to just say, hey, look, I'm Steve Greenbaum. I know you. I want to put my arms around you and have to work through the character. I mean, that had to be, your mind had to be going a mile a minute while you were trying to work through as the character.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting situation to be in, not only with the employees of franchisees, but franchisees, and some of them of whom I know, that didn't didn't see right. through the disguise, which was interesting. And sure, you do. You want to be able to do that. And in fact, it was interesting after the show aired, I heard from several of those folks wanting to talk about the experience and the interaction with Brad. Brad has become this third party to the conversation and to the organization. It's very, very interesting. I guess I created a persona that's taken on his own rather than me being in a disguise. It's this guy. You know what I mean?
Right,
which is,
right.
It's interesting. But, no, I agree with you. It is hard, and you do want to do that. And I hope that in my interaction with our franchise owners and with, you know, the people that are most important in the organization, all the team members and everybody, that they genuinely know who I am and how I would approach it if I had the opportunity to have done that. When I was doing that, and there was no real guidance given, I just felt my role was to be that guy and understand those unique needs and take the opportunity to hear what I could hear. I'm often a guy that believes if you're open and you're sincere and you illustrate that you're going to get that back from people. But that's not 100% reality, because not all people are comfortable telling you exactly how they feel to your face. It's easier for them to tell a friend, to tell a peer, to tell someone they don't know. And sure. And even if they care about you, believe in the organization, are committed, or even a good friend sometimes, it's sometimes easier to hear through the eyes of someone else what people really think. And so, you know, you don't always love what you hear, but at least you're hearing it, and it gives you an
sure.
opportunity
right.
to better understand, you know.
Right. You know, in talking with you, we, at various events and anytime we get to see each other, the conversation a lot of times turns to marketing. As a matter of fact, the first time that I met you and had an opportunity to have a discussion with you was at the first Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference in San Francisco a couple of years ago. And so I think it's almost ironic for me that my first interaction with you is in and around marketing, and here you are as Brad Kelly talking to a franchisee who turns to you and basically is complaining about, you know, the advertising marketing fund and the way things are. How did you feel about that, and what have you since done to move towards, quote-unquote, correcting that?
Yeah, well, the fundamental concern the franchisee had, and it was a great point, was the National Ad Fund tries to be as efficient as possible. So in some of these local tools like pens and giveaways and things like that, it's printed with a single URL for the brand in general, keeps costs down. And you know, they're really supplemental tools. They are not at the heart and soul of our marketing strategies. So a huge takeaway, you know, a huge takeaway from me that from that was, and of course we put Todd on the marketing committee since then, and he's extremely enlightened, is, you know, the PostNet National Advertising Fund pays for individual websites for every franchisee in the system, the search engine optimization and maintenance on an ongoing basis of those websites, blog support for those websites, direct mail, email marketing, six different campaigns that go on throughout the year that are, four of those are national and tied locally. So there's obviously an opportunity in the education portion of this. I think a lot of franchise owners oftentimes get into franchising and they pay a national ad fund fee and just kind of expect you to do things the way they expect them to be done for their individual location. And in our particular situation, we have a structured advisory council that has a marketing committee who looks at the total budget for the year. This is all franchisees, not corporate headquarters employees. They submit a budget and a recommendation to headquarters. We review that with the National Franchisee Advisory Council, and it's put into place with the endorsement of franchisees. And so I think there was a misunderstanding there on, you know, how we spend, where we spend, what the assets really are that are available. But at the same time, just a simple idea like, hey, give me a local budget for the stuff. I'd rather have my name on it, my phone number on it, my center URL versus it. That's all very relevant and extremely important. And frankly, Todd's a very passionate guy and feels strongly about it and wants to be heard. And So, you know, again, nobody loves to hear it, but I respect and appreciate the feedback. It's been put into action, and now I think our job is, and what we've been focusing on, is the communication to really help owners understand exactly where the resources go, how they're spent, how the decisions are made. But let's be clear about this. Imagine owning a franchise, Paul. You've got to run a business. You're focused on accounting and finance. You've got your own individual marketing initiatives. Typically, you're a mother, a father, a sister, a brother. You have your own family. I mean, it's challenging to run a small business and then know every single way that the organization supports you or develops programs or implements. So, you know, the communication is critical and the education is critical, and seeking feedback to continuously improve is critical.
Absolutely. And having spent 5 years as a multi-unit franchise operator back in the late 90s, I definitely understand that probably more than many in franchising would, having been on both sides of the fence and also almost catastrophically failing as a franchisee, because I basically took my eye off the ball. So very easy to do. You know, through the episode, I was looking for some commonality, a common denominator, if you would, in the type of person that is a franchisee for Postnet. And obviously it's not well represented because we're only four on the show as opposed to 700 franchisees that you have. But what is your target market from the standpoint of a franchise candidate?
Well, as you can imagine, the business model has evolved over time, and I think the show, to your point, is difficult to represent kind of where the business and the brand position is today. But the model today is really best suited for someone with a sales and marketing background or someone that has worked in that field or understands it, because at the end of the day, we help customers or small businesses get online, get found online, go mobile, better position and communicate their business and brand. And it's the integration of web, print, local, mobile, and social media and marketing that really, those are the assets and the tools that we use to help small businesses thrive. That's the best way to describe it. So you really need someone that, I don't want to call them a coach or a mentor, but that they want to be someone that is going to be a problem solver for a customer, somebody that has strong communication skills, that has a business or sales or marketing background, not just that they can go out and they can sell business, but this is consultative now. We were very much a transactional business through our pack and ship years and even into some of the print years of the evolution of the business and the brand, where you came in, you wanted X number of this, we sold it, and when you came back, you had that need again, we filled it. Today's Postnet, we really sit down with a small business owner and we talk about their challenges, their marketing and communication challenges, how to use new and contemporary tools to dovetail into their print or their web strategies or to use mobile marketing strategies. So it's more consultative. It requires a good listener. It requires someone that can not only follow the system, absorb what they've heard from the customer, but then be able to produce solutions with the tools we provide. So it's a different candidate today than it was, you know, 10 years ago. But there are a lot of people in today's marketplace that are either disenchanted or downsized or looking for an opportunity to do something for themselves, that have professional backgrounds. Statistically, this is one of the most interesting periods in entrepreneurship that we've seen as a country. And it's a result of the economic downturn. It's a result of companies figuring out how to do more with less. And so that entrepreneurial movement fuels our model in an incredible way, not only creating prospective franchisees for us, because we've had a tremendous growth surge here in this last quarter, and this first quarter looks really exciting because of the repositioning of the business and brand and all the small businesses out there that need the basic help that we provide.
Sure. And it is an interesting time for entrepreneurs today and people considering small business ownership today. I know one of the brands that I'm working with, we're seeing a candidate come up that really hasn't been a candidate in the past. And it's the older individual that actually now is living in a multi-generational home with not only their children but grandchildren, and getting involved in small business to help the family move along that either might have been repositioned through a layoff or whatever. So really a changing dynamic that you're right, we've never seen before. I mean, hell, look at, you know, home building today. They're building multi-generational homes today where two or three different levels of family can live with each having their own living area. So it's changing. Change is here, and we have to embrace it.
Yeah, and I think that whole generational discussion is very relevant and important to consider as a franchise organization. When I look at PostNet Southern Africa or PostNet in Australia, the average franchisee age is more mid-30s. You know, versus the today's demographic here and in traditional franchising in the U.S., and we're now seeing more activity from folks that are early to mid-30s that have seen their parents make investments and make career decisions, and the level of uncertainty they find themselves with, given a lot of changes in our world, and want to start earlier at creating that kind of a healthy foundation for themselves. So I think as a industry, franchising is going to see a shift in the demographic, which we were all experiencing more of folks in that mid to late 40s to retirement stage, depending on the individual and where they were. And we certainly still see a lot of that, but I think we're going to see a lot more younger, successful people, entrepreneurs, building multi-unit businesses, starting franchises, and kind of changing that demographic.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, it's interesting with your experience on Undercover and sharing the fact that you did not complete high school. And be that as it may, I know today that, you know, you wish you did and wish you had continued your education, but certainly don't regret where you're at today because of it. You know, Mark Cuban, the entrepreneur on Shark Tank, recently said, you know, don't go for an MBA. I don't put a lot of emphasis on MBA. I'm looking for people that, you know, have the smarts, the drive, and the passion. And what are your thoughts to that? I mean, should, you know, this young workforce coming up, you know, continue on with their education? Should they get some real-world experience and then make the decision? And then, and of course, and a lot of them also going to make the decision to look at entrepreneurship, to your point, at a younger age.
Yeah, I think I'm going to err to the side of conservatism on this because I have a 26-year-old son that has a finance degree from Loyola in Chicago. I have another son that's wrapping up his graphic design degree. Excuse me, was graphic, moved into web now, so web design degree. I have a daughter that will be heading into college, and I have every intention of her graduating. So I think times have changed. So it would be unfair for me to – I think times have changed.
Sure.
I think knowledge is power, and I think it's important – there's no doubt about the fact that I'm a product of always seeking to learn. I involved myself with IFA because I was enamored by some of the founders and the legends in franchising back in the early 90s. That's what brought me into the IFA, and quite honestly, it's why I try to give back as much as I can because I was given a lot from a lot of these folks. But so I think that there is a pure drive, pure passion, real-world experience that is undeniably extremely valuable. But at the same time, given the competitive nature of the world, I think that young people should pursue their education, obtain their degrees, but not assume that because I have an MBA, I'm going to be – I mean, when I interview and when we bring in executives into this company, an MBA is interesting. It certainly helps foundationally, but we're really looking at the whole person. We're looking at how they fit into our values, and we're looking at real world and real life experience that they may bring in addition to the education.
Yeah, I think that's great insight, I myself, I mean, I did graduate high school, but only went one semester to college. A lot of people are amazed at that. And I, too, have been, you know, putting my children through college, and one of them has his master's in real estate finance. So I think it's, I think the clear point here is, A, they have choices. B, they should capitalize on as much as they can and integrate that experience all together to become a more well-rounded individual and use what they can to get themselves ahead and get past challenges that may look like roadblocks but are really nothing but challenges that can be overcome.
100%, Paul. I agree with you 100%.
You know, one of the franchisees, and of course this was the heartwarming one, had a child that was working in the business, and I believe his ailment was Asperger's syndrome, and that was a very heartwarming segment of it. And I know you're very much involved in charitable work, so if you would kind of give us some of your perspective of that experience with this franchisee and also some of the things that you do from a charitable standpoint.
Sure. Well, I think like a lot of people in my situation, I mean, we're so blessed to be healthy and have healthy children and to be in a position to be able to create the businesses and follow our dreams. You know, there were so many other people that faced so many different challenges that include everyday life. So, you know, as a person, I try to be cognizant of that. I'll be honest with you, the young lady, you know, we didn't vet the folks that were on the show. That was done by CBS. We had no influence over that at all. So I wasn't aware of Shannon's son or the situation, and it's interesting because Shannon's mother has been a dear friend of mine for 10, 12 years.
Mm.
And Shannon's mother was also actively engaged in the franchise business, was someone I was close to. She never said a word. She was a veteran.
Mm.
And just an amazing, strong woman. I didn't know Shannon that well because she worked more at the center level, and I guess that's why that segment
sure.
worked out. But it's interesting to me that Dusty never said a word, Shannon's mom, that you know, they went about the business of doing business and taking care of their family. So being exposed to that was, you know, it was touching. It was really amazing. And like I said, you go back and you look at some of the challenges you faced in life, you know, and mm-hmm. I had a pretty tough upbringing in a single-parent home. You know, it was tough. But you look back and say, come on, do I have room to complain about anything when I look at all the incredible, you know, look at folks that come back from the war and the challenges they face. So anyways, the point is that it does mean a lot to me. It was a very powerful experience. I was so thrilled because Shannon decided to donate that additional money for Asperger's to the young man's school. So not only did she have the tuition, but she also had the ability to help improve that. It was a small school that provides a big service in that community. And on a more somber note, Shannon's mom, Dusty, was a cancer survivor who recently had another bout with cancer and passed away a few days ago as a result of her body rejecting some chemo unexpectedly. Passed away.
Oh, wow.
So that particular segment, I mean, Dusty was a dear, dear friend, an important contributor to this organization and served on our advisory council. And so that story just has become
wow.
even more heartwarming disheartening and difficult, which creates some real challenges for Shannon, you know.
Sure.
But this is real
life,
Paul.
Tell us some about, yeah, it is real life. And it's so great that it's able to be shared because too much focus is always put on the, you know, the glory, not what gets there,
right.
not what other people are dealing with, the challenges. There are a lot of people want to talk about the woe is me, the obstacles in the way. And quite frankly, when you see some of these, and not only on your segment, but some of the other segments that we've watched on CBS Undercover Boss, I mean, you almost get to the point of feeling ashamed about complaining about anything when you see what some of these people are dealing with and overcoming.
Yeah, well, and this is a small sliver of one organization. When you look at a total organization or a total city, or it's just, you're 100% right. When you look at the world as a whole and the incredible people that face everyday challenges, you're right. It's important to remember how fortunate we are at every level.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the charitable organization that you're involved in. I believe it's in South Africa. Is that correct?
Yeah, thank you. I have been a part of the Health Store Foundation. I think it's been since about 2008, maybe even before that. And this is the brainchild of a gentleman named Scott Hillstrom, who was concerned because there were so many, and still are, by the way, children in Africa, especially in underserved communities in Africa, dying from illnesses that could be treated for 50 cents,
wow.
Simple pills for malaria, just his pain was in the fact that he was looking and saying, my gosh, that's all it would have taken was a couple of malaria pills. What does that cost? How come we can't get the medicine to these countries or to these people and communities? And what he learned was that when you can get the medicine there, oftentimes it's counterfeit, it's bootleg. I mean, there are subcultures where it's not always good medicine, so people die, and a lot of people die. And he thought franchising was a way to create a distribution system. So this is a not-for-profit model to supply. Think about the supply chain or the distribution system franchising offers, that business model. And a way to effectively put good quality drugs in the hands of competent people to save lives. And I mean, that organization has saved hundreds of thousands of lives since I've been involved. And it's really amazing not only to see the work that's been done in Kenya, but recently there's been expansion into Rwanda with great growth. And often, well, most of the time, these clinics are run by the equivalent of a registered nurse in that country that's providing services in the community. The challenge is to turn a not-for-profit model to a model that would yield some level of income and profitability for the franchisee, and that's been the real focus and the work. But the fundamental objective is to just distribute safe and needed medicine to save children's lives. So I've had the opportunity to serve on that board for many, many years. I serve on that board with some really smart people that I'm honored to work with, like Jim Amos, Michael Seid, Sid Feltenstein. So that's an honor, Eric McCarthy. So I'm really honored to be with a group of franchise professionals, and our real objective is to try to make a difference, try to do something here, try to use the franchising model in a different way to provide real help and good, and that's really neat to be a part of.
That is, it's got to be so spiritually and emotionally rewarding. Kudos to you for that, but I know you're not doing it for the kudos.
Paul, before you go on, let me do one thing. I'm going to take one selfish plug, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Which is, if anybody that's hearing this is interested, they can go to CFW Shops. So it's Child and Family Wellness, CFWShops.com, and learn more about it. You can contribute. The folks there would love to hear from you. So since we talked about it, if anyone's sitting there going, wow, that sounds interesting, I'd like to know more, that would be how they could do that.
That's perfect. So the million-dollar question, if we can put a value on it, with so many, because we can't even put an accurate number on how many franchise organizations there actually are out there. You hear figures from 3,000, 3,500, 4,000, and we know that, just a fraction of that are actually members and involved with the IFA. And, of course, a lot of these are you know, franchise organization or businesses that started and they became franchises. They failed. Maybe they're starting up again. Maybe they're trying to shake a little bit and make it happen. There's a lot that are starting out. There are some that, you know, have, you know, three or four locations and having a hard time getting out of their own way and looking to take the next step. So there's a whole host of them. So the million-dollar question is, what advice would you give all those that fall into that category of, you know, startup, tried it, didn't make it, trying it again? What would be that word of advice?
Yeah. I think fundamentally the word of advice is be sure of your objectives. And in a thoughtful and respectful way, I would say be careful of what you wish for. Because franchising outwardly looks like this cool way to use other people's money to grow a business and a brand and create wealth and build this mega empire. And the reality is that franchising is a huge responsibility. And one that can't be, I mean, just huge responsibility, can't be taken lightly. And that there are specific life cycles in a franchise organization, from startup and growth to really getting good at systems and operations and focusing on profitability and then fundamentally creating value for the franchisee. So it's a huge responsibility. It starts with a very stable business model that's scalable, and it includes building a very solid team. If it's purely profit-driven, it is wrought with risk, in my opinion, because the thing about franchising you can expect is things will change, people will make mistakes, employees will come and go. You know, franchisees are people, and so we're faced with a myriad of challenges from health to personal. And so there will never be a day in a startup franchisor or someone that's coming into this business's life where they won't wake up and something new will be thrown at them, something new, something different, something that challenges who they are, I mean, from their values to how they do business. So my advice is really know going in with both eyes wide open. Understand that this is a huge responsibility. It is not purely a financial mechanism, and it has to be built on a stable and solid foundation in terms of unit economics and quality people and all of those right elements. And I think if you go into it for those reasons, you know, that you want to help others succeed, you want to build something meaningful, you understand that you've got to be able to embrace change and be a student of the business and lead with passion and conviction, then it can be an incredibly fulfilling experience. But it is not all easy. It is not all fun, because we make mistakes, people make mistakes, and it requires going in for the right reasons, making sure that integrity and values are aligned, because you've got to build trust, and being adaptable, incredibly adaptable.
Absolutely. And if I might add, communicate.
Absolutely.
Steve, I'm really honored and proud that you were a guest on our show today, especially launching an exciting fourth year on Franchise Today. I thank you with all my heart, and I look forward to seeing you and get to know you better at franchise events as we continue to grow in what I really refer to as this great thing called franchising. Thank you very much, Steve.
Yeah, Paul, I just would like to say I really appreciate everything you and your organization is doing for franchising. These types of programs and resources weren't available when I started franchising. So a lot of kudos to you and your team for the passion, the effort, and your desire to bring information and support and programs to franchisors to make franchising better. So thank you for everything you do as well.
I appreciate that. Well, everybody, that's the first show of 2013. Things have changed. A lot of things have changed. The show now is produced by Franchise Foundry, where I am at right now as CEO and president. We've got a lot of great things going on, but a lot of great things that we're going to bring to the table for Franchise Today and Fran Summit. Next week, Jeremy Lee Duke is on, and we'll be talking about local marketing. Until then, I wish you the best, the very best, in this great thing called franchising. Franchise Today is out.